Welcome to Pep and Ched with Megan Nash, a co-production with the Creative City Center in Regina, Saskatchewan. This is the podcast where I call up pals and we talk about touring, we talk about snacks, we talk about the music industry, we talk about anything and everything that comes up. And today's episode, it's a lot of fun. I get to sit down with Nuella Charles. She is incredibly talented, incredibly busy, and I feel very grateful that she was able to take time out of her busy schedule to speak with me. We talk about horses, we talk about songwriting, and talk about how we don't really have any hobbies. So hope you enjoy today's episode. Today's guest is Nuella Charles. Nuella Charles, I feel like you're one of the hardest working people in this music industry. And I'm so glad that you found time to chat with me today in your busy schedule.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to take the listener down memory lane with us. I want to take the listener to this kind of maybe awkward moment on my part. We're at the Junos. And we're at some kind of mixer thing, or it's like before. Do you remember that? So we're waiting in the lobby before we go into the to watch the show. And I believe, I don't know, there were hors d'oeuvres being served, yeah, and like drinks being served. And I just had to say to you, like, Before I have like any more beer, I need to tell you that I just really respect and admire you, really respect your work ethic and everything you do. And like, I don't know, it's just like zero chill.
Yeah. It was nice though, because I think for myself, I mean, at that point, like super like independent, no team, nothing. So I'm doing everything, and you kind of live in your own world when you operate like that, and you don't hear those types of like reaffirming statements unless you tell them to yourself.
They're
very far and few in between from the outside, and so it was nice to hear. And just like being there too was like, why am I here? It's like imposter syndrome, but like, you know, you try to own the space that you're in. And so no, that was really nice. And so like, yeah, just thanks.
Well, I meant it all. And I'm just probably going to just keep saying that throughout this entire podcast. This is just going to be like almost an hour long podcast of me just giving you like compliments and just, you know. Seriously, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to chat with me today. And I'm glad you remember that and remember it in not a weird light, you know?
Yeah.
That's I appreciate that. I can't, like, it blows my mind to think back to that, like being in a room full of a bunch of people we don't know, all closely, you know, all close together, waiting to go into an arena. And like, I remember that being pretty packed, because it's like, yeah, that like that mixer event that's happening in the lobby. Like, I remember there being a lot of people, and I've always had like a certain level of social anxiety, so it was like already over. I was pretty overwhelmed, but now looking at it through like a COVID lens, I'm just like, whoa, we were all so close.
Yeah, it's weird. Like even just like concerts now, or like seeing shows that are happening in the States, and it's just like, is that real life? Like, are people packed in like that? So it is weird, but I think at some point we're just going to have to like, not get over it, but like get over it, you know? Like, I don't know. It's weird to think. I do know I haven't had a cold since all of this has started.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, you know, I don't know.
I totally agree with you. Like looking at the pictures in the States, you're like, is this real life? And it's like, I've seen that for a few festivals. I'm like, okay, well, they're doing that. I'm seeing some masks. But like, also I feel like maybe they have more, I don't know if they're doing more vaccination, like proof of vaccination to get entry to some of those things. Like, I'm not sure, how they're doing that, but, yeah, it's like, it's definitely just kind of kind of weird out there. What was it? You've played a couple shows this year.
Mm-hmm.
What's that experience been like for you in the times we find ourselves in?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, the first one was like an outdoor festival. And it was unique in that, like, the attendees, they each had like their own table set up. Like, it was a table, and you either bring like a nice comfy camping chair, or they give you one, like just a plastic chair or whatever. And you scan a QR code on the table and everything gets brought to you. So if you want a drink, they bring it. If you want merch, they bring it. Like, it's just
cool.
It was cool to see from, like, if I was attending, that's kind of how I would like it to be. But even just as a performer, it was nice to have an audience. But it was weird that they were sitting.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, well, some got up, but, like, they were all kind of designated to their space. But it was still nice. Like, I think we all felt safe. And I think, it, you know, as an entryway into, like, back to live music, it was a good start, I think. And then the second one was indoors. And it was actually supposed to be originally just a live stream, with like full video production and audio and stuff. And so they still did that, but they also incorporated it to include 50 in-person people. And so it was nice. Like, it was good to just like get back to like, oh, there's lights and like,
yeah,
you know, fog machines. And it's like, oh, this is cool. So no, it was really nice. It was really good.
I love the idea of being able to sit at a table and hear like an artist say, oh, this is a song off my so-and-so record, and be like, I really liked that song. I'm going to like decide to buy that like right now and like have it be brought to
me. Yeah.
There are some things that have developed out of necessity during this time that I hope we do stick with. And some of that technology, I'm just like, that's cool. That's really cool. I really like that idea of having that. I'm curious, like, what's your experience been like with moving things into the digital world as far as shows go?
Yeah, I mean, like, I haven't really done any. And
same.
When it started, when the lockdown happened, I was literally in the midst of, like, I was at the Junos. And I got there the night before, and the next morning it all got canceled. And so, and that week I lost my apartment in Toronto that I was going to move into with a roommate. And everything was just like, don't come, stay where you are, you know, quarantine, lockdown, whatever. And so I had to move out of my apartment in Edmonton. So I was living out of a suitcase. And so for me, it was like the last thing I want to do now is a live concert, like, from my living room, you know, like, which I didn't have. My own space. Yeah. And so it wasn't something I wanted to dive into. And especially seeing a lot of people doing them every day or every other day, it just felt like overkill at some point. And I'm very big on like quality, which I guess there's an argument over like just share regardless of quality. But for me, it's like, if I'm just singing and playing a guitar, I want it to sound the best it can be, because that stuff lives forever on the internet. Mm-hmm. And so I've kind of just not wanted to do any of those things unless, you know, the quality could be guaranteed. And so with the live stream that just happened, it was like the best thing. So yeah, I just have stayed away. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong for it, but it's not something I was looking forward to doing.
You know, I feel like I have said almost like the exact same thing. Like, yeah. I feel, I hear you on all that. Just for a moment, if you don't want to talk about it anymore, because I know it's like this collective trauma we all experience, but just for a moment, I just want to back up a little bit. Like, I feel like, you know, we remember the, like, where we were when the Junos were canceled, you know, like in the musician community. Mm-hmm. It's like, because that's like when it really hit home. Like, I think it was like the day after the pandemic was declared, I believe. And
yeah, well, it was all like the NBA canceled. And when the NBA canceled, everyone was like, whoa, this is serious.
Right.
And then came the domino effect of everyone else. Like, yeah. It was crazy. I had people call because I was staying at my publicist's like Airbnb because we had a TV interview the next morning. And so I was staying at her house and she kept getting calls. They're like, hey, has Nuella left Edmonton yet? Like, tell her not to get on the plane. And they're like, she's already here. And they're like, oh, man. Oh, no. And so they were calling Axe, who hadn't arrived yet, to tell them to stay like where they are, because they're going to announce, you know, that it's canceled and all this stuff. And it was just like a bizarre, like that whole morning was just like, my friend and I were sitting watching as everything was just happening around us. And it was like, it felt like we were in slow motion and everything was going super fast. Hmm. And then, you know, by 1 o'clock, you know, everyone had gone home and we're like, well, I guess we'll go have brunch.
Yeah.
Let's go, and then we'll drive back to Edmonton.
Wow. So that's what you did. You drove back to Edmonton that day. And then, but then like, where did you, like, I'm not trying to be like, ask like too much of a personal question here, but like, where did you live? It was a traumatic, stressful situation for like, for everybody. But like, if you didn't have your apartment anymore because you were in the midst of a move and then that wasn't going to happen, like, and to live out of a suitcase, like to live out of a suitcase. Sorry, I'm just like making it worse. Yeah. I'm like, how stressed were you? But like to live out of a suitcase during a time when everyone is told to stay home and you're like, well... Yeah. Like, how did you, like, kudos to you for, like, being able to, like, I don't know, stay, like do that. Like, wow. How'd you handle
it
that?
It was weird because, like, my whole plan was, like, hey, go to the Junos, go home, start selling my furniture. If I haven't, like, I kept most of the bigger stuff because I'm like, I'll still need this. So I'll wait till the end of the month to sell them. And then I just got back home, started packing stuff, and sold basically all my furniture, and then I put most of my stuff in my mom's basement, and I where did I go? I know, I think I went to the farm first. So my grandparents have my uncle have a farm just like an hour and a half north of Edmonton, and they breed equestrian horses, and so it was a good time because they were really busy and so they could use the help. And so I was there for a bit, I think a month and a half. And then I was like, okay, I need to go back to the city or like, you know, at least life and not just horses. And so then I went into my mom's house and I redid, she had a spare room, but it was used as an office. And so I basically redid that into my bedroom and kind of brought my bed up there and stuff. But yeah, it was basically between the farm and the city for the most part until August. And then I was like, I gotta go. I can't, because in that space and in that head frame or head space or whatever, I'm not creative. I'm not energized. I'm not really happy. I feel like I'm content. And it was good because it was really the first like quote unquote vacation that I've had in like years where I didn't do anything music related. It was like, you're going to stop. And that's just what you're going to do. And it was nice in that sense because I never felt like I could just take time away. Even if I traveled, I was still on my computer, like, doing music stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there was never a pause. But, yeah, it was good. And then in August, I somehow one of my old college friends was looking for a roommate in Toronto. And so I moved in with her and then ended up finding my own space a little bit later. And now I'm here and it's been good. It's been kind of weird because, like, I don't know, like, I've wanted to come here, but under, you know, different circumstances, for sure. Yeah. And I feel like the momentum I had is just, like, gone. I think with everyone, really. And so it's just, trying to figure out what is the best move, knowing that this isn't going to go away anytime soon.
Oh, yeah. goodness. I know. It's so bizarre. Like, like, I'm releasing a record in November, and usually, you know, I have a string of dates attached to that. And, like, now it's just, like, it's like, I have two shows regionally. Well, I have about three shows regionally coming up, and that's it. And, like, you know, we're just going to see what happens. Like, it's just such a bizarre, stressful time. And, like, yeah, I just relied on live music. I relied on, like, the live music, live performance part for income, like,
oh yeah,
so much so, like, I don't know, I didn't really diversify my revenue streams as an artist. No. I was just like, if I'm like, if I need rent, I'm gonna go play a house concert. Like, if I'm like stuck, you know, like in a tough spot, you know, gotta, like, I didn't even have like benefits for the longest time. Like, I've been talking to other friends who are like, you gotta pay for that Blue Cross, like, it's a good investment. Yeah. It's a good investment. But beforehand, it's like, if I had like a, you know, a cavity, I'd go play a house show. And like, you know, not having that that option has just been like, yeah, really, really difficult. And then it's been like so weird because so many people are just like, are back to work and have been back to work, and you know, CERB is gone, CRB could work for some folks, but like, that's running out too. And it's just like, I'm just so curious how people are gonna make it through this fall and winter. Oh my gosh, this is like, I'm not trying to be so like so depressing here with this, with this conversation, but I'm just like, it's a real concern, right? Because like CERB, like when you look at the, you know, you look at how many people were sick when there was CERB, the number, like, there just weren't as many people sick because like we were able to stay home. And then now it's like, when you make your living from getting people to gather, it's a pandemic is pretty stressful. But you know what though, another thing you mentioned too is how like when the pandemic hit, that was the first time you took a break in a while. And I've heard that from a few folks, and I've felt that myself. And it's just like, I think that really speaks to how much hustle culture there is within the music industry. And it's like, because it's like, you feel like you always have to be on because you want to keep that momentum going. I feel like as an artist, you're expected to like, just like, you know, the industry says jump and you say how high or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I think it's really worth noting that I feel like that it took a pandemic for a lot of people to actually rest and take time off, you know. And but it's not like it's not like we were resting though. Everyone's like so stressed out still, but it's like, I don't know. It's so interesting. Like, do you like when things are like getting going again, do you have any, are there like any self-care things that you did pick up during that time that you want to apply to whatever this new normal moving forward is going to look like?
I think it was just like a matter of like detaching myself from my computer.
Oh yeah.
Like prior to COVID, like I would sit, watch a movie with a computer on my lap, you know, like as I was working on something or like trying to do whatever, like create new posters or whatever it was. Like I was literally always on my computer. And now it's like, no, like if I'm going to watch a movie, I'm just going to enjoy, you know, and just try to disconnect as much as I can from the work side of things, because it's not worth it. Like, who cares if you can't get that poster up, you know?
Yeah.
At 11 p.m. on a Tuesday night. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
Most, you know? So it's like just that sense of urgency. Like, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. You know, it's going to get done when it's going to get done. And for me, it was just like it was a lesson in chilling out, I guess. And just, you know, realizing that I don't have to bend over backwards for an industry that ultimately doesn't care.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, why am I killing myself for other people? That was kind of my realization.
Well said, my friend. Well said. We're just to give the listener an insight, we are recording this over Zoom, but we don't have the video going. My internet's been kind of weird. I want you to know that I've been nodding this entire, like, the entire time you're seeing that. I'm just like nodding, like 100%. And I wish that I could have heard everything you just said back in 2017. Like, if I could just go back and tell myself that, because I was so stressed out that year. I was so stressed out with deadlines that at the end of the day, things could have been pushed, but I was like pushing myself so hard. And it's just like, for what? You know, like, yeah. Why? Like, oh my goodness. Yeah. Oh yeah. My goodness.
And I think there is something about like having plans and like following through and executing the plan you set up, but also like at a healthy level. Like, even like over like this whole year, watching these gurus and like watching online videos and people and talking about the hustle culture and all this stuff. And it's just like, but why, you know, when it's just none of it really makes sense. And you can see that with like the exodus of Toronto. Like, there, so many people left the city because they realized they didn't actually have to live here to work here, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just a lot of people quit their jobs because they're like, this is not, I'm not here to work 60 hours a week. You know, that's not life. So it's, I think for everyone all around, like regardless of what job you're in, like they all kind of had the same kind of realization. Unless they love what they do, then, you know, kudos to them.
Yeah. 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 It's a, and you, yeah, it's, sorry, I get so excited sometimes. I'm like, I need to collect my thoughts here. I feel like, you know, because we are creatives, we do what we do because we, you know, we have to at some point. Like, there's some part of us that just like, we have to make music. We have to sing. Yeah. Like, when I, like, you are such a great vocalist. You're a fantastic vocalist. And I know that like singing is like such a part of your being. You get that when you listen to your music, like the listener gets that.
Oh, thank you.
And like, I'm sure that if you were like, you know, still like on the farm full time with the horses, you would still be singing, you know?
Yeah.
To some level.
I think so. Yeah. I think it was just like that itch to create and to write was like slowly coming back. And I didn't force myself to do anything. And you know, there was like those times where I'm like, do I even want to do this anymore? Like even today, like, do I even want to still do this? Like, why am I so broke and, you know, killing myself to sing? And I think a lot of it is too, like the emergence of like Spotify and all these things that are great on one hand, but you know, like we're spending thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars making music to get back 0.05 cents, not even. And so it's like, why am I still at this point? I mean, COVID had a big impact on being broke, but it was just like, you know, it's just made me reevaluate, like, is this still what I want to do? Or is there other things that I'm passionate about? Because I also realized that I have no hobbies. Ooh. Like, I have nothing else that I'm really like, what do I like to do? Well, I don't know. Like, everything I've done for the last 10 years has been around music.
Oh my gosh.
You know, like, I'm good at graphic design, kind of, because I had to learn for myself. Like, I'm good at like online stuff, you know, to an extent, because I had to teach myself. But like, it all came back to because of the music and getting it out there and trying to learn all these aspects of the business. But when you strip all of that away, it's like, who am I? You know, which was interesting.
Oh, this is so relatable. I'm like kind of freaking out over here. It's like, I 100%. So, you know, you're really passionate about something. You do something because you have to do it. You're a creative person. You love to write. You love to play. You want to sing. And then you make it your livelihood. And then it's like, yeah, what do you do just for joy now? It's like, I'm entering like this phase of like releasing a record and I'm just not writing songs. It's like the last thing I'm thinking about right now is writing a song. And I have to kind of like accept my own ebb and flow with that process, because I used to be like, I've wrapped up so much of my own identity, my own sense of self, in like under like the term of songwriter. Like, that's what I am. I am a songwriter. And when I'm not writing songs, I can be like really hard on myself and it doesn't make any sense. But like the idea too, or like the thought of like, what you know, not having a hobby. I so relate to that. And I kept thinking I was going to love gardening. And I hate gardening, Nuella. I hate gardening. I love the idea of it. But I hate gardening. And like my garden right now, it's just, it's mainly weeds. I was thinking about just like putting a bunch of clover there next spring and just letting it be clover. I can't stand it. I tried to write a song about it and all I got was, I wish I liked to garden. That's all I've gotten so far.
Oh, it's so funny. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's weird. And it, like for myself too, like having kind of the different, like the not two lives, but like we grew up on a cattle ranch, you know? And so like from 6 to 13, we were on a ranch and that was our life. And that's kind of like, it makes it easy to go back to the farm and live very simple. Like I'll have like the same outfit every day for a week, you know?
Yeah.
It's basically just like sweatpants or jeans or whatever, you know, the work clothes. And it's not like I don't care about the outsideness, like the, what's the right word? Like how I look or any of that stuff. Cause your one job is to take care of the animals, you know?
Yeah. I love
that. And so you're there, you know, shoveling out the stalls. And it's like, this is normal life, you know? And just having the two worlds is nice to be able to, you know, take a break when I need it. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. But it's also not something that I would consider my hobby, you know?
Right. Yeah. I have so many questions about the farm. We just need to take a quick break. And yeah. And I really want to just like nerd out on some ranch talk.
Yeah.
You are listening to Pep and Ched with Megan Nash, and today's guest is Nuella Charles. Right before the break, Nuella, you mentioned that you grew up on a ranch.
Yes.
And I have this thought that I just want to run by you and see what you think. Because, you know, we have made music our livelihood and our lives, and there's like, there's not... There, for me, like, there's not a, I don't know, there's nothing that isn't really music related going on in my life. Like, even like family stuff, like, I'd miss a lot of, like, I used to miss occasions all the time. And then, like, when we weren't touring because of COVID, I still wasn't gathering with people. You know what I mean? So yeah. It's like, I'm still, still not there. But, but I'm curious if, like, growing up on the ranch and, like, having, because like that's another situation where like your livelihood is also like your lifestyle, and I feel like I wonder if it's been, if it's, I used to think it was like easier for me to accept that music is my, not only my livelihood but my lifestyle, because I grew up in a way that, like, you know, take your kids to work day, well, we couldn't do that because we would just be staying home. So I had to go with my cousin to A&W for take your kids to work day, because I couldn't just stay at home at the ranch with my parents, you know? So I'm yeah. wondering if that, like, I don't know, like you live where you work, if it's just like, if you feel like there's been like a connection, or like if that transfers over to like your music career, like your time on the ranch.
I don't know. I see what you're saying. But I don't know if that is connected. Cause I mean, we left BC when I was 13. So the ranch got sold. And so then we ended up moving to the Bahamas.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah. So we were there, for 5 years, and that's kind of where the music, like I always sang as a kid, and but I was also in every sport imaginable. And so in the Bahamas was really where the music side started coming out. And then for grade 12, we moved back to Canada. And so it was, I don't know, maybe a bit of both. But yeah, it's been interesting, like, seeing. I mean, it's also been cool to see that I've been able to have music as, like, my job and my career. But... I don't think the two, I kind of separate them in my own head, I guess. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, I have my rant, like my farm life and my city life, and the two don't really connect much.
I grew up on a on a ranch as well. We had mixed, we had grain, farmland, and cattle. And my folks sold the farm, like, I think it's gotta be close to 10 years ago now. And, yeah, I really, like, when I was 17, I wanted to be as far away as possible from the ranch. Like, I had, like, you know, I feel like very normal. But now as, like, an adult, I think about it quite often. Like, I go back to it a lot in my dreams. I don't know if that's, like, sad or something, but I go back to the farm in my dreams quite often. And I really miss that place. I don't think it would have been, like, sustainable for me to, like, still be there, even if I still had just, like, the home quarter or whatever. But I miss it a lot. And I've thought about it, like, if I, yeah, just wishing, yeah, wishing, wishing I could go back, but and just, like, visit and, like, work there and write there. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Oh yeah, like I feel like that too. Like, if there was a setup where I had my own, like, little cabin or something.
Yeah.
You know, that it was outside of the main house, like, that I could just, like, that's my space. Then I don't feel like I would be a bother to anyone. But, like, my grandparents are getting old. My uncle is, you know, working there, and it's just like, it's their space, and when I go to visit, like, I do still feel like a guest. And I guess that's just me too, like, wherever I go, if it's not my own space, I just feel like I'm a guest and I'm intruding, like, that I'm on people's space. So I try to just, like, give them as much of it as possible. But I don't know, it's interesting. I'm grateful to have that background. I don't know, I think if I ever make lots and lots of money, I'll definitely build something on that land. But
that would be so cool. I think about I used to like be like, what if I made all the money and I bought the farm back, you know? But, like, the older I get, the farther away that feels. I'm just like, how was I planning on making all that money? Yeah, I don't know, maybe I had some weird expectations. But, you know, I never had horses though. And, like, do you, I don't know if you've met Dana Beeler. Have you ever crossed paths with Dana Beeler? She's in a band called Hello Delaware. That's her project.
Oh, we were in a writing camp a couple weeks ago. What? We were both mentors. Yeah, we were both mentors.
Oh,
that's
goodness.
Really funny.
And that's the music industry, folks. Yeah. It's small. That's so awesome. So I don't know if you both talked horses. I don't know if horses came up. But she loves horses, and I never grew up with horses, so I've been on a horse probably, like, twice in my life as a small child, and that's it. I just want to know if you are also, like, very passionate about horses, because I feel like people really love horses.
Yeah, I feel like they either really love them or hate them. Like, it's like a deep-seated fear of them, or I love them. But for us, like, even when we lived in, so, like, I was born in Kenya, and then I lived in Switzerland until I was six before coming to Canada. So there, that's where, like, my grandparents had their little farm, and they were breeding. So they still, to this day, breed equestrian horses. Mm. And so that's where it started. I had a pony, like, her name was Candy.
Oh.
And that was like my foray into it, I guess. And my love started there. And when we moved to Canada, I think it was the first winter, my brother and I, we both got, white horses. And I forever thought they were white Arabians, just because I think that's what I was told, and I just believed. They were definitely not Arabian horses, but they were white, or gray, as you would say. And so from 6 till 12, 13, we had our horses, and we had our, like, I don't know, a couple acreage. I don't know how big it was, but our house was fenced in. And our horses would just run around. And if we wanted to, like, we could either fully saddle them up and then, you know, take them out onto the road to my grandparents' house. Or we just, like, put a halter on and jump on bareback. Like, I've fallen off so many times because we're just hanging out, you know. And they became a part of our everyday. But, yeah, when we moved, we had to sell our two horses, which I bawled my eyes out. But my grandparents to this day, like, whenever I go there, it's always, like, I visit all of the horses there. I'm just like, hi, I'm back. Like, talking to them. But, yeah, it's a different kind of life. And, you know, there's good and there's, like, it is a working farm. And so you do have to work. And it can be dangerous. Like, they had just gotten a new stallion from Germany when I was there this summer. And he's not, like, he is getting more adjusted, but let's just say he likes to kick things, and his kick is swift and mighty, and there are lots of holes in his shed, and you just want to pray that you are not in anywhere near the back of his legs when he sweeps, because it's just, at any point, he just, like, loses his mind. And he's like, I am a stallion now, you know. But yeah, it's interesting because you have a certain level of respect for the animal, but also, like, your purpose is to take care of them. So it's nice to be able to live in that world for a bit. But yeah, I haven't ridden in a long time, mainly because they don't have any rideable horses. They breed and then they sell to, like, equestrian riders who then train them up.
Okay.
But yeah, it's definitely hard work.
Well, I think that was a part of why we never had one. My mom was just like, I don't want to have to take care of that horse. And now as an adult, I totally get it. But as a kid, yeah, I wanted a pony. Wanted a pony. But, now, you know, next time you see Dana Beeler.
I know.
I'll give her a heads up, too. I'll say.
We'll have to chat.
Yeah. I just think that horses are pretty cool. I think I understand the passion for them, as a, you know, an outsider looking in to the horse world. But wow, you know, just like when you mentioned though your horse is being sold, that's like so sad. And like you were 12.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh.
Yeah. But like I was in this program called 4-H, and so like every year you would raise an animal to then be sold, and so it was like I was used to it, but also I never thought I'd sell my horses. So it was kind of like when it came down to it, it was a shock. Like, oh, so we're actually doing this. Okay. Like I remember walking into my mom, she was packing and I was pretending. I was like, oh, mom, like they're sold. Cause we had to ride them around to show the father, the guy who was buying them, that they're rideable for kids. Mm. And I was pretending to cry. And then all of a sudden I just started like bursting out in tears, just like actually crying. But yeah, I mean, it was a nice memory. And I think the idea, like looking back sometimes and to be like, wow, I was 12, like from 6 to 12, we basically lived outside, you know?
Yeah.
And today that's not a lot of kids' reality. Like they're like, what is a horse? You know?
I just like in my brain, I imagine this horse like coming to your window in the morning and being like, good morning. You know, like just like, and then like, I don't know, like then the birds like open up like your window, your blinds. And then it's like, ah, new day. Very like Snow White vibe, but with horses. Yeah.
That's funny. Well, they never did that, but like they were just out and about. And like my little sister, so we were each 3 years apart, so it was me, then my brother, then my sister. And so she was too small for like a horse, but she got a Shetland pony, so a little pony, and its name was Jet. And so Jet was the troublemaker out of them, but the three of them would be like a little gang, just like roaming around the acreage, just like doing whatever. But yeah, no, it was fun. It was fun. And I think I'm just grateful for having that kind of upbringing, because it really was the best of both worlds. Like we went to school in the city and we had all of that. Like we never had anything. We were never without like one or the other. Because I knew some kids growing up who lived way out in, like, the Chilcotin area, like, the bush, basically. And they lived there, and they homeschooled, and they didn't have that kind of city life or that exposure to other kids. And so I think, yeah, we had the best of both worlds.
Mm, nice. When we were growing up, we had miniature donkeys.
Oh, nice.
yeah, so we never had horses. We had miniature donkeys. And I remember when my grandpa would come visit the farm, I remember my parents, like my mom would come up to me and be like, all right, Megan, now you have to go ride the donkey because grandpa finds it really funny. And then like this donkey was like still large enough that I could like ride it and not hurt it. But yeah. It wouldn't be very long, but I'd be like, okay. And then you know, I'm like, I don't know, like 11 years old and like, okay, all right, donkey, like we gotta, you know, perform for grandpa. And I would ride this miniature donkey. And my grandpa would be pleased. That, you know, that's what funny. This explains a lot, actually, of like, I feel like that explains a lot about my live show to this day. It still has a very big like, you gotta go ride the miniature donkey to make grandpa laugh energy to it, actually.
That's funny.
And then we had chickens and turkeys and cattle, but I never wanted to take over the farm. Like, I just also, I don't know if I was really set up to take over the farm, and I'm not trying to be critical of my folks in any way with that, but I do think that there are unfortunately some gender roles at play with that. Like, I think if I had been like born a boy, things would have been, and my parents like perceived me as like their son, I think that I maybe would have like, I don't know, been shown different things and maybe would have had a different path. But you know, that being said, I also like when I was 17, I was like, I'm going to write songs for a living. Yeah. I don't really know what that looks like, but I'm going to do it. yeah. So you were doing a songwriting workshop with Dana Beeler a couple weeks ago. Do you do like do you do a lot of songwriting, like facilitation work, or do you just like every now and then, or is that a big part of like your career is that sort of realm?
Not really. Like, they just happen to come to me, like, and then a lot of them are through like the different music associations in Canada. But it's just, yeah, I kind of just take them when they come, and if I feel like I can be of service in that way, because for me, like, there's no wrong or right way to write a song. It's just like, if you're honest and authentic in what you're saying, and if it makes sense, and you know, and then like, if you want to get into like top 40 pop, then there's a way to write the song. But like, for new songwriters, like, I'm not going to be like, this is the one way you can do it to make a hit. It's about just letting them explore like who they are, what they want to say, and kind of guide them in crafting a well-written song, as opposed to like, you know, going in and being like, if you want this on, because on radio, like, you got to do it a certain way, because there are those types of methods. And, you know, there's huge pop camps happening all over the world where their one purpose is to write a song for like Katy Perry or whoever. And then that's super focused. But in this sense, it's just, you know, kind of more beginner, mid-level, just seeking for an outside opinion. And you know, that I can do, because I don't profess to be anything, you know, anything major when it comes to that. I just say, be authentic and honest in what you say, and then you'll get your point across.
I was going to ask you what your favorite songwriting advice is, but I feel like you've maybe already summed that up, like with just like being honest and authentic.
Yeah. And I think it's just like there's different, I mean, within different genres, there's different ways of writing. Like, I think in the folk, kind of more folk acoustic, it's very a storyteller. In narrative, like in the way that the words, like it's you're telling a story. You know, more of the pop stuff is like, it's about you or the other person. And so it has to still be, it's like a conversation. And trying to make the words more conversational. So if you were just to read them off the page, they would make sense, as opposed to them being kind of more like a poem. And like a lot of alternative rock music is more kind of like a poem. Because if you were just to read them off the page, they would not make the most sense, you know? But when you put them to the music, it's amazing. So there's just different styles, and it just depends on what it is you want to do. And I think just study people within that genre to see how they do it and kind of go from there.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you on that. Like, I remember, like, when I was first learning how to write songs, it's like I didn't take a songwriting workshop. I just, like, looked at a lot of country music, really. Like, that's because I, you know, I grew up in Mortlach. That's what my peers listened to, and that's what I was exposed to. And that's, like, you know, when I was growing up there, it was kind of, like, pre-internet. Like, well, like, we still had it, but it wasn't good, you know? Like, I remember, like, to download one song, it would take, like, literally all night. Like, the dial-up would have to be on all night to download, like, one song. So it's, like, you know, the radio was still, like, the main way I was getting songs. So it's, like, yeah, listening to a lot of country music and getting that, really, like, what ended up being, like, a pop song format, really. A lot of those country songs are written that way. And yeah, it's interesting to me too with like a lot of those songs, how like the title is usually the hook that is usually at the like the last line of the chorus. Like that's like I don't know. I just was listening to a song the other like a country radio the other day, probably like when I was in a store or something, and I was just like, oh, there it is. Yeah, song structure, fun stuff. So I'm kind of I'm curious, like I want to talk a little bit about snacks.
Okay.
And this is like this is a show that, you know, we usually try to at some point talk about like what is your favorite go-to tour snack. Before that though, because you have spent time in the Bahamas, I just want to know if there's like a snack that you associate like solely with the Bahamas that maybe you can't get in Canada, that you're like, when we go to the Bahamas, that is what I'm going to snack on.
Oh, 100%. Okay. It is called conch salad.
Nice.
And it's conch is like a mollusk. It's in a shell. It's a very, I don't know how to describe the shell to you, but when you see it, you kind of associate it with like the Little Mermaid, maybe. Like it's this, this big pink kind of horned shell. Anyway. It is very good, and they chop it up with like tomatoes and celeries and onion and lime, and just like it is the most delicious thing. But you can't get it here unless you buy frozen conch, which I actually found the other week at the fish market. But I had to, I didn't buy it because I had to double check the recipe to see if it was safe to make without cooking, because you eat it raw, you know. Okay. And so here, I don't know if you could eat, if like if you were to thaw out the conch, if it would be safe to eat, or if I had to cook it. But yeah, long story short, it would be conch salad, which you can't get here. But yeah.
Oh my gosh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's very good.
And then, like when you're touring in Canada, what is your go-to tour snack or snacks? I like to do the, you know, we like to do like the three you get your drink, you get your sweet, you get your salt, you know, like when you're at the like the gas station stop. So what's your go-to?
I don't know, like I think it changes a lot. I've been really big into like sparkling water. So like, but like the flavor, like they have like a good like watermelon one, which is nice. And then I always get peanut butter, not peanut butter, peanut M&Ms.
Yes.
I don't like peanut butter unless, which is weird, but I like peanut butter cups or like peanuts in chocolate, but I don't like peanut butter by itself, which is kind of, I don't know why, but that's just it. Yeah, so peanut M&Ms and... Yeah, I don't know. Lately, though, like it's hard because like I haven't been on the road, and usually like when we get to a show, it's like they have the rider there, and it's kind of a mix of fruit and like mini chocolates and, you know, water and beer and wine. But lately at home, if I can, I like eating just like cucumbers. Is that weird? But like I'll just have a cucumber in my fridge, chop off a chunk, and just like eat it in my hand like a banana, but I'll just like bite it, because I don't know, it's something with the crunch and, you know,
yeah,
it's just, it's good. And I was never really a big chip person, but yeah, that's kind of where I am right now.
So when you're touring, would you grab like a pack of those like mini cukes? Mini cucumbers?
I think so, yeah. I think that would be the way to go. Because this cucumber fascination has been, like, the last year.
Okay.
Has been, like, you know, like, where have they been all my life? and so I have seen those mini ones. But, again, like, on tour, I think that'll be the best way to do it, is to grab a bunch of those. But, yeah. I don't know. It changes, because sometimes, like, you don't have, like, for me, I never want the food to go to waste. And so mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, we will get a bunch of food from the grocery store, and then we'll have snacks in the car. And I think we did that once. But then by the time we get to the venue, you know, we're fed, and the next day everything's like bad. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, it's just, so I try to, you know, plan appropriately, but yeah, it's different every time.
I like this conversation has been this has been freaky. This has been scary, because I feel like so many things you've said are just like, I have said this, and yeah, 100%. I actually, the very first episode of this podcast, I talked to Belle Plaine, she's an artist out of Regina, about this, and she's very pro cooler, and I'm very anti cooler. Because it's like, it turns into a compost, unless you have that one dedicated person who's like, I'm gonna keep this cooler alive. But like,
there's
too many hats. There's too many hats to wear, you know. I'm already sometimes, you know, driving, booking the shows, advancing the shows, doing the social media, preparing the set, you know, thinking of the banter, all these things. I can't throw cooler guy hat on too.
Yeah, it's the last thing. It's like, do I want to buy it and all the ingredients to make a sandwich, or do I just want to go to Subway and buy one?
Yeah,
like, you know,
100%.
It's a lot. It's a 100%.
Nuella, this has been such a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much for chatting with us, or with me. I said with us, thinking about the listener, but that comes off kind of weird. So thank you for chatting with me.
Thanks for having me. This was great. Yeah, I think a lot of like what we've said, and how you said it's freaky, and how like we're all kind of thinking the same thing. It's like, I think a lot of us are in the same boat. We just never talk to each other about it.
Yeah, 100%.
So this has been great.
Thank you so much, pal.
Thanks.
Nuella Charles, thank you so much for the very fun conversation. Dear listener, please check out her website, nuellacharles.com. Buy all her music, listen to all her records. She's fantastic. You've been listening to Pep and Chet with Megan Nash, a co-production with Creative City Center in Regina, Saskatchewan. The Creative City Center is supported by the Canada Council for the Arts, Sask Arts, the City of Regina, Canadian Heritage, and Creative Saskatchewan. And this podcast is made possible because of the ongoing support of these agencies. So thank you. Also, thank you to the Garys for the use of their music that you're listening to right now. And also, they just released a new record, so be sure to check out their new music. New music from the Garys, folks. This is very exciting. The Creative City Center is a community-based art center that used to present around 200 events a year and gave a lot of emerging artists a home as they were starting out. Now they are a home for a lot of online production, so check out creativecitycenter.ca to see what else they're cooking up besides all of this pep and ched with me, Megan Nash. Support live music, folks, no matter what form it's served up in. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.